Do cuss words in movies bother you? Or how about violent scenes or sex and nudity that streams into your living room while you're watching Netflix or HBO or whatever video on demand service that you watch? Well, it seems there is a significant number of Americans, mostly socially conservative families with young kids, who want to be able to control what they see or hear with the movies and TV shows that they watch in the privacy of their homes. A few years ago, Neil Harmon had an idea. A technology that would filter out unwanted content from third-party streaming apps like Netflix or Amazon. He called it VidAngel.
Welcome, blessed soul, to Movie Heaven, where we have but one glorious streaming service, VidAngel.
VidAngel lets you watch filtered movies for just $1.
Yes, a dollar. That's how much you pay at a lemonade stand, except this won't give you Giardia.
VidAngel has a huge selection with thousands of movies, the best new releases, and all of IMDb's top 100 films.
It wasn't before Harmon's idea was met with fierce legal challenges from Hollywood. Major studios like Disney, Warner Brothers, 20th Century Fox, and Lucasfilms all claim the practice is copyright infringement. Harmon's idea is not new. In past years, many entrepreneurs have launched movie content filtering businesses, and they've found plenty of customers. But time and again, the major Hollywood studios and film directors have squashed those endeavors with lawsuits. A few weeks ago, in mid-October, VidAngel itself filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. But Harmon says he's not giving up. He says this legal fight may be video filtering's last stand. He says parents and families should have a legal right to filter movies. And he says many Americans would choose to use his content filtering service if it were legal and available. On the program this hour, Neil Harmon talks with Doug Wells about his story, as well as his company's challenges and his aspirations for VidAngel.
Neil, welcome to The Bottom Line.
Thank you for having me on, Doug.
So Ross gave a nice introduction to the services that VidAngel provides, but let's take a step back. Where did the original idea for VidAngel come from?
It came from four brothers who we all have young children, and we love great content. So we simultaneously started VidAngel and an advertising company that some Utahns will be familiar with. It's called Harmon Brothers. It's an ad agency that created the Poopery video and Squatty Potty and Purple Mattress, Chapbooks, a number of ads. And we love great content.
Some very successful companies you've helped there.
Yes, yes. And we love great content. And but at the same time, we have young children. And children tend to repeat whatever they hear. So they experiment with things and they're like sponges. And if I could indulge in a personal experience, one of my favorite movies is the movie Cinderella Man. This is a story about a boxer who rises to fame and injures himself right as the Great Depression begins. And there's this scene in that movie where his son steals a salami. And he goes, takes his son back to the store, has his son return the salami and apologize. And then they come out onto the sidewalk in New York. And he bends down and he says, "We don't steal. No matter what happens, we don't steal." And his son starts crying and says, "But, you know, my friends, they got taken away from their family because they didn't have enough food at home." And he said, "Well, I promise you, I will never create a situation where you have to leave our home." Later on, when they hit the lowest of the low, his wife, not knowing the promise he had made, sends their children away because they don't have heat and they don't have food. And he drops to his low, to his nadir, and he begs his former business partners for money. He goes to the state office and he asks for assistance for the first time in his life. Goes back, pays the bill, and brings his children back, and it's a really sweet reunion. He has a comeback, partially because of his injury, and he becomes a famous boxer again. And as soon as he has enough money, he goes back to the state office, and everyone's shocked that he's there because he's famous now. And he returns the funds.
I remember the film. I remember those scenes. They're great scenes. How do they relate to what you're doing at VidAngel?
So the coach in this film has a New Yorker mouth, and he's a great actor, really well done. I've watched the movie without filters, but I don't want some of those words repeated with my children, but I want them to learn that lesson. I want them to learn the lesson of integrity and honesty, and I don't want my 3-year-old and my 5-year-old experimenting with the words that his coach uses. They're just not ready for those words and don't know how to use them. And so there are just certain things we don't want in our home, but we want certain media and certain content to be experienced, for those lessons to be learned. That is the reason that I wanted to create VidAngel, is because I wanted that for my children. And I wanted it for their children, that's the essence of it.
Yeah, no, that's a great reason to start something like that. You think about it. There's millions of families that feel the same way. My movie would be Jurassic Park and Titanic. Mm-hmm. When my kids were your kids' age, when Cinderella Man came out, those were films I wanted my kids to experience, but either they were too scary in Jurassic Park or beautiful film Titanic. Some nice themes in there, but there's a couple scenes that I didn't want. And I actually had a video recorder, video machine, that would let me do 2 decks, and I would have to manually do this. It took hours to make these films something that I was comfortable sharing with my family. So I completely see the need for that. Now, how did your service now works with streaming services like Netflix, like Amazon Prime, but how did you start? Was it always that way, or how did you guys initially start?
We have been through so many iterations. VidAngel's story is a story of how to get the studios to allow them to pay them. That is the story of VidAngel, because it is a service for which the studios don't want to be paid. So we tried, when we originally launched VidAngel, it was based off of a Chromecast device that hooked into the television, and we were part of the early SDK before it was launched, and we got the system working, and we raised money from a number of venture funds.
And I should mention, I was on the investment committee of one of those venture funds,
that's
Kickstart.
Right. Kickstart, that's right. So at the time that we raised that money, we had a working Chromecast device that we could stream Google Play movies through the Chromecast, and then our SDK filtering system would filter as it's playing over the HD TV. We raised the money, and within a month of raising the money, Google launched the Chromecast officially. And when they did, they pulled all the technology that made the filtering possible from the device. We didn't know why at the time, but that was the first step in a long iteration of us trying to figure out how we let the family pay the studio, but the family get what they want, which is a filtered version of the movie. We tried the Chromecast, we tried YouTube, we tried partnering with Google Play, who got a refusal from the studios. We wrote the studios and said, hey, we've got a system where we could purchase DVDs and Blu-rays, and then we could filter them to customers. We'd love to buy content from you. We never got responses to those letters that we sent, and we decided to launch the service. And that service took off, the DVD Blu-ray service exploded, and a year later, Disney, Fox, and Warner Brothers sued VidAngel without any advance notice.
And you're not the first company in this space that's been sued for doing something similar. Is my memory correct? There was a company here that was kind of a blockbuster video of its day. It was called CleanFlix.
There's been a dozen companies, and CleanFlix was
Did
the leader.
Did CleanFlix go all the way to the Supreme Court with their battle, though?
No. So it's okay. CleanFlix lawsuit. Was stopped, and a permanent injunction was entered in Colorado. It didn't even go to the appellate court; it was just the district court.
And when did that happen?
That was in 2005.
2005, the same year, which is I assumed it was going to be close. Orrin Hatch was very instrumental in passing a bill called the 2005 Family Move Act. Tell us what that is and maybe why that gave you hope that a service like this could survive.
So the Family Movie Act was Congress's attempt to fasten a system where the studios could get paid for something, but a technology company wouldn't have to go and ask for permission. The reason that they created the Family Movie Act is because there were companies at the time that were asking the studios for licensing, for permission to do the filtering on top of DVDs and Blu-rays, and they, with dozens of meetings, they could never get anywhere. And so Congress said, okay, if you follow this system, if you ensure that the family has an authorized copy of the film, that they pay to watch it, and that they set the filter settings themselves. We don't want some person in Utah or in Texas deciding who what's family friendly and what's not. It's got to be the family who's deciding what they want filtered out of the movie. And then the third thing was is that there should be no fixed copy of the altered version of the work ever created. So that so we wouldn't have bootlegged, edited movies out there being sold. As long as you follow this system, said Congress, then you're good. You're golden. And that got one company out of the lawsuit. But there's an interesting thing about the Family Movie Act. If you go into the history of it, in 2004, Congress made an attempt, the House made an attempt at the Family Movie Act. And in that version, it only provided for in-home filtering, a DVD player. The 2005 version that Senator Hatch pushed through adeptly through the Senate and through Congress, it said that the filtered version of the work could be transmitted to the home. And so this second provision, this is what VidAngel built its business off of. We said, okay, we need an authorized copy. Someone needs to pay to watch it. And then we have, according to this law, the ability to transmit the filtered work to the home. So, so that is the law. That's the genesis of the law. Now, over, you know, a decade, we got the idea to start VidAngel in about 2012. So that was 7 years after the Family Movie Act was passed. There were still no options out there, and so VidAngel was an attempt we were the leader in trying to make filtering work for families on modern streaming devices.
Okay, so it's been a while since I heard your initial pitch back when you were raising capital. But do I remember correctly? It used to be you would essentially, the viewer would have to buy the DVD at one price, and you'd essentially buy back that DVD from them for $1 or less, or
if they wanted to. So we'd sell, you know, we purchased millions of dollars of DVDs and Blu-rays. We sold these to customers, and if they loved the movie, they'd keep it. If they didn't, they'd sell it back to us for a dollar or two less per day. And that service we launched because our understanding, because of our previous history, those were the only authorized copies for filtering. Everything else was prohibited.
It seems to me like that would fully comply with how you described the 2005 Family Movie Act.
Seems to me as well. I mean, that's the reason we did it. And to this day, we feel like we were in the right in our interpretation of
the
Family Movie
Act. And is that the model you're in the lawsuit with the studios over, or is it a different model that the studios
so
are going after?
So that is the model that the studios successfully obtained a preliminary injunction over back in December of 2016. Then we launched a new model in June of 2017 that allows you to connect your Netflix account, your Amazon account, HBO, in the future, Hulu, Apple, other accounts. And the idea is if the studios don't want us purchasing discs and selling those discs and filtering them online, that here's a system where the studios get their streaming licensing royalty. The customer is paying for their Netflix account, paying for their Amazon account, and the studios are getting remitted their streaming licensing fees. And so that's what we built our new system on. The studios have objected to both systems.
Okay, well, let's go back. I want to come back to this, but before we leave the physical DVD model and these things get very complex, but high level, what was the court's reasoning for agreeing to the injunction?
The court said that they believed that we were in violation of the Digital Millennium and Copyright Act, which states that you're not supposed to decrypt discs. You're not supposed to decrypt encrypted content. And VidAngel's interpretation of the law was, if a family's purchased an authorized copy, you can't decrypt, you can't watch a DVD or a Blu-ray without decrypting it. When you stick it into your DVD player, it has to be decrypted in order for you to see it. And but the studio's contention was is that it's authorized to stick it into a DVD player and decrypt it. It's not authorized for you to decrypt it and then filter it in a transmission to the home. And that was their major contention.
That's Neil Harmon, the founder and CEO of VidAngel, speaking recently with Doug Wells. You're listening to The Bottom Line on KCPW. We'll be back in a moment.
You're listening to The Bottom Line on KCPW. For podcasts and more local shows and lectures, follow us on iTunes or visit the Local Shows tab at kcpw.org.
Welcome back to The Bottom Line on KCPW. Today we're talking with Neil Harmon. He's the CEO and founder of VidAngel, the Provo, Utah-based company that gives movie watchers the ability to filter unwanted violence or dirty words or nudity from films that they might see otherwise on Netflix, Amazon Prime, or Hulu. For over a year, the company has been engaged in lawsuits with some of Hollywood's biggest studios, including Disney, Warner Brothers, 20th Century Fox, and Lucasfilms. A few weeks ago, Neil Harmon's company filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. He spoke about it with Doug Wells.
Yeah, so you're up against some huge, huge names. I mean, it's almost impossible for you to win, right? The studios can just bury you in legal fees. and yet you're in there fighting. You're doing what you can. What keeps you in the game?
So what keeps me in the game is what VidAngel represents. VidAngel is not just a company. It represents a movement of people. And when we were sued, we had 70,000 people voluntarily donate to the litigation. We had 10,000 people write letters to the judge. We had almost 200,000 people sign a petition for Congress and the judge to see that there was a need for this. We had 24 organizations, including Focus on the Family and James Dobson, and many, many other organizations that signed declarations on our behalf. And then we were able to raise through a financing called Regulation A Plus through the SEC. We were able to raise funds from our customers. And we asked for $5 million to get us to the Supreme Court. And we raised that in 28 hours. And then we turned it off, and Texas wasn't able to get in, neither was Florida or Arizona. There was a few states. So we waited until all the paperwork got approved on those, and we opened it up for one more weekend, and we had to shut it off again at $10 million. So,
These are donations, or these are investments.
Okay. These are investments in the company. So these, we have almost 8,000 stockholders in VidAngel, and these are the people that we're fighting for. And many the consistent comment, because we told them we're up against the largest media company in the world. This is not going to be an easy fight. You should only put money in if you can lose it. And a lot of people just said, I don't care if I lose my money. I want this so bad. I want VidAngel to go and fight for it. So that was the consistent message. And throughout the process, as the bad news has come out, the investors have been so supportive. They send us notes trying to encourage us. Families send us notes. I often get handwritten notes from six-year-olds and eight-year-olds who are saying, "This, you're my favorite company, and you know, don't give up. We're so sad that you're being sued."
That's awesome. I mean, you're facing a daunting task, but you have a great crowd cheering you on.
That's right.
So it, in some ways, it balances out. So what is the studio? Why is the studios fighting so hard for this? I mean, a lot of us travel by airline now. Travel's gotten a lot less expensive. We're on planes that the seat back from the seat in front of us has a screen in it.
Yeah.
Some of the airlines are letting us watch films for free, and they're all filtered so that they're appropriate for a general audience in the body of the in the back of the airplane. So they're already doing it. So what's the pushback on letting consumers have this in their home as opposed to in an airliner?
I'll give you a recent example. Just before our Ninth Circuit hearing in June, Sony had, from the director's perspective, the audacity to go and launch the airline and TV versions of movies on iTunes and Vudu and other streaming services. And Sony said that they had thought that they had gotten permission from all the directors for that. And immediately there was a burst of foul language on Twitter. Seth Rogen was swearing at Sony, and the DGA threatened to sue Sony, and Sony backed down immediately, and within 2 weeks they shut down the website.
The DGA, and the only reason I know, the Directors Guild?
Yes, the Directors
Guild
of America.
I have some notes in here that have start with the D and a G, so
I'm sorry for assuming
that's okay.
But yeah, the Directors Guild of America, that's a large organization that that serves directors in America, and they felt like that violated their rights, their artistic and what they're called, it's a French concept, moral rights. And so directors feel like you should experience the movie as they created it or not experience it at all. For some reason, they've been able to capitulate to the airlines and the FCC and the airwaves and say, or in China or the Muslim countries, and they cut those films because they get big checks. But when it comes to a family making the choices in their own home, they're not okay with that.
Now, do I remember right? Was there a DVD, a physical, you know, when very few of us use DVD players in our home anymore, but was there a DVD that you could, a physical hardware device that you could do this on?
Yes, there was. A company that was led at the time by Bill Aho, it was called ClearPlay. Bill Aho was the one who worked with Senator Hatch in Congress to get the Family Movie Act passed.
Did he end up getting sued? Did ClearPlay end
ClearPlay
up getting
sued? Was sued at the time, and they were in the Colorado lawsuit that I was describing before, but because of the Family Movie Act, the judge threw out their lawsuit. And the studios now, because that judge decided that, they don't contend that it's not okay for a DVD player. They just contend that they say it's okay to do it on a DVD player, but in order to do it on streaming, you need permission from us.
It's so frustrating from the consumer standpoint. You know, we don't care about all that, right?
Yeah.
We just want our kids to be able to enjoy great movies that have good lessons in it and take out the stuff that we don't want them to see. And why should it take hours per movie of an individual's time? I mean, what a waste of productive time.
Yeah.
Because of all this. And, you know, the sad thing is, even if you wanted to use a ClearPlay today, that's not where the world's at. The world's at streaming, which is what your new service does. So you launched streaming this year. Did you think that there was a safe harbor that you could launch that and say, okay, here's how we're going to be okay with the current laws and not get sued by the studios?
So what we were hoping is that the streaming service would placate the studios, because they said that all their complaints were not about filtering. They were okay with filtering. That's what Disney said as they came out swinging on the original lawsuit. But what they weren't okay with was this unlicensed on-demand streaming service where you could watch a movie, a filtered movie, for a dollar. They weren't okay with that because they weren't able to set the price. So we said, okay, you're able to set the price and you're able to set the windows on this other streaming service. We'll build a service that works the way that you want it to work. And
that makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Yes. And I can see Disney's argument that, you know, if I go through iTunes, I have to pay $4 to stream the movie. And through your service, I could get it for a dollar. And I could see where...
Which isn't totally true, because you really had to pay $20 for it. But yeah, you could effectively watch it for a dollar.
But I can see both sides of that argument there. But on the streaming side, all of a sudden, Disney's kind of lost their, in my view, Disney has lost their high ground. because their relationship is with Netflix to stream it, and then your service is on top of that.
That's right. That's right. And they, I mean, theoretically, if they're for filtering, they should be for this kind of a system. But they've come up with more copyright arguments saying that they're really for filtering, but they're not for copyright infringement. And that was the original reason that Clearplay got sued back in 2005, was because of copyright arguments. They had derivative work arguments. And it doesn't matter what the arguments are. The arguments change. They move around, and they do different positioning, and they argue well in court, and they spend millions fighting us in court. But the end result is that filtering isn't a reality for Americans, the way that the studios interpret the law. But we don't believe that the studios, it doesn't take rocket science for an American to say, hey, is it okay? Is it all right for Doug and for Neil to, if they're not liking what they're seeing on their home TV, to cover their eyes? Yeah, that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean,
my
we'd hate
wife
to
does that all the time when there's something scary. On
yeah,
television.
So does mine, and so does my daughter. She gets scared from certain things. And is it all right for us to plug our ears if we don't like what we're hearing? Yeah, that's okay. Or if it's too loud or whatever. Whatever our reason, could we do it with a remote control? Are Americans okay with that? Yeah, and they'd hate the idea that if there was a law that said you can't do that. So now let's take that a step further. The reason the Family Movie Act was passed was because the studios will never, ever give consent to filtering their content. They won't. Not to the family. They've shown decades of history of this. But Congress said, okay, here's a technology that allows you to do the skipping and the muting in a pre-programmed remote. The average American would look at that and say, duh. I mean, maybe I don't want to do that myself. Maybe I think that's stupid. Maybe I want to watch the movie exactly it is. Maybe the reason I watch movies is because of the language and because of the nudity. But I don't want a world where that's not allowed. And so, you know, it's because we feel like we have the layman's argument, and because Disney is now opposing this new service, we're just convinced that eventually the courts and the people will see through their cloud,
the courts are an interesting institution, though, because I don't think they actually look at it, and some would argue it's not their job to look at what is the impact of their ruling. Their job is to look at the law and just say yay or nay, and that's a scary proposition, because I do think you have to look at what the impact of some of the laws are. But I think a lot of people would say the judicial system may or may not ever rise up and say, okay, we're going to say this. But maybe the solution, do we need a 2017 Family Movie Act? Do we need a new law to address what's going on?
We believe that a new law that clarifies the original Family Movie Act could solve the problem. And we have been in touch. We have lots of allies in Congress, but you all know that Congress
is hard to get anything through Congress.
It's a hard proposition right now. So
it was in 2005 as well, when Orrin Hatch led the original bill that got passed. Mm-hmm. Is there support to introduce a new bill? Are people talking about doing that?
Yeah. We have talked about that. And in fact, I had lunch with Orrin Hatch just a few weeks ago, and he says that he is, he's on Utah's side, that this is a hard problem, and that legislation is difficult right now. But his staff has been trying to get us a meeting with Disney for months to try to find resolution to the situation. But if they don't come to the table, I mean, Variety, When Hatch came out saying that he was going to get behind this and try to find a solution for everybody, Variety said essentially it was they interpreted it as a threat that if there's not a solution that's forthcoming, that legislation could be the answer again.
So if Disney were to return your phone calls and were to say, yeah, let's get together and talk about this, is there a common ground that is out there that you think you could find with studios like Disney's and others?
Well, there's a very easy solution. And that is for Disney, I mean, the solution would have been for Disney to sell a license to ClearPlay back in the day. The Family Movie Act would never need to exist if they would have sold a license back then. And the solution today is on their shoulders. If they sell a license to VidAngel, then there's no dispute. They make their money, and families get to filter. So it's so easy. But it at the same time, it's so hard for them because you see Sony who comes out and the directors lay into them. And so when I went with one of the executives of the studios to go visit all the studios, like the first thing, because we had written Disney back in the day and the other plaintiffs and a bunch of other studios and said, hey, this is what we're planning. If you want us to do it in another way, please let us know. This is how we make you money. And this is how families get what they want. And they didn't give us any feedback. They just sued us later. So as soon as they sued us, we went to the studios who didn't sue us and said, thank you for not suing us. If you're not happy with the way that we're paying you, we're happy to do it the way you want to do it. Like if you want to sell us a license and we rented out a movie for $3.99, you know how much of a pain it is to handle all these DVDs and Blu-rays and try to figure out how to buy them all? We're happy to do that. And when we went to those studios, they said, it's really tricky because of the DGA, and they see the DGA as the directors as the source of their money, right?
They're the creators. They're the content creators.
They're the content creators. And all no studio wants to tick off the directors. And so any studio who would go, even though there are a couple of studios in particular who would like to partner with VidAngel, they can't do it because they'll get blackballed. So when I went with this executive after our meetings, when we were headed back to the airport, he just said, Neil, this is a really tough situation. He says, I don't know how this gets solved. It's almost like the studios need a scapegoat, that they need something to force them to do it so that they can go back to the directors and say, sorry, our hands are tied.
Yeah, we need a new law. And unfortunately, it sounds like it's going to be very difficult to pass that, because if there was a new law, then every studio would be on level playing field and they wouldn't have to worry about alienating the content creators.
Well, the original law was sufficient. But the Ninth Circuit, what they said was, we can't have VidAngel's interpretation of the law. Otherwise, there would be a hole in the way we view copyright. You know, they just can't fathom that there's a scenario where someone doesn't have to get permission to stream something. They can't fathom that. So it's the original law was should have been sufficient, but it wasn't. Like, for us to win on the original law in the Ninth Circuit is about as likely as for BYU to win the National Football Championship this year. So,
well said. On that note, let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more with Neil Harmon, the CEO of VidAngel.
This is Enrique Limon, editor of City Weekly and proud supporter of KCPW. City Weekly has given an alternative voice to Utahns for over 30 years, covering news, entertainment, arts, music, and more. City Weekly is distributed throughout the Wasatch Front and available online at cityweekly.net.
Proud to support KCPW, this is Jenna Woodbury of the Ryrie Woodbury Dance Company, presenting Parallax, an evening of contemporary dance featuring choreography by Kate Weir and world premieres by Raja Featherkelly and Daniel Sharon, September 28th through the 30th at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. Information at ryriewoodbury.com.
Welcome back to The Bottom Line on KCPW. I'm Doug Wells. Today we're speaking with Neil Harmon, the CEO of VidAngel. It's a company based in Provo that filters unwanted content from third-party streaming apps like Netflix and Amazon. When you came up with the idea for VidAngel, you know, you've got this idea. You and your brothers run this consulting firm that helps introduce products to consumers in a cost-effective and a humorous way. How did you initially get the word out about VidAngel?
Let's see. Our very first campaign was a video that we created where there's a family sitting on a white couch and it juxtaposes the shock movie of like 1939 with the shock movie of 2013, which is Gone with the Wind. It was the first time like in a major film that somebody cussed. And then Wolf of Wall Street was obviously a shock movie for a lot of reasons. And so the way that we communicated this visually is that we had someone with a paintball gun that was dressed in black. They put on the back of their shirt the D word. And then when it showed the clip from Gone with the Wind, right as he says, frankly, my dear, I don't give a pop. The paintball goes off and hits one of the people on the couch. And then it fast forwards and shows the history of swearing in Hollywood and as it exploded. And we did a bunch of research on that. And then we shot that same family with 798 paintballs for each individual to represent all the swearing in Wolf of Wall Street. And so it's quite a spectacle, and it's done to this really famous classical piece. So that was our very first.
How many views did you end up with?
So this video, it was the most viral video we'd ever done, and it went to almost 1 million views in just a couple of days and made it the front page of Apple and YouTube and Apple TV and YouTube. But then somebody actually flipped the switch on the video and set it as adult content, and it took out all the momentum out of the video.
Interesting, because there's a big controversy taking place now that's very related to your space, which is YouTube is now demonetizing certain videos if there's objectionable content in there, which is kind of filtering kind of what you guys are doing. So that sounded like it was a strong launch. So you guys were off to the races right from the beginning. Now, at this point, you were buying DVDs with the initial model.
No, that was the very first. So that was the version.
With the Chromecast.
So we had been shut down with the Chromecast, and we were trying a YouTube version. With the YouTube version, we got a cease and desist on what we were doing because it broke YouTube's terms of service. We later learned that emanated from a contract with the studio. WikiLeaks got a hold of Sony documents.
I remember
supposedly
that.
Because of North Korea,
right.
And all the Sony contracts showed all the standard clauses that the studios have, and there's a clause in every contract that prevents you from the distributor from allowing filtering to occur with a third party or from them doing it themselves. So we assume that this is in every single contract, and that's the reason that we got shut down on Chromecast. That's the reason we got the cease and desist letter.
Boy, this is a tough business.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to get away from the whole legal aspect
of it. I'm sorry.
But we keep getting sucked back in because it's a core part of your business. So at your peak, and some of these numbers might be confidential, so just directionally get us, how many families had signed up for your service?
So I'll give you some of our own numbers that we released on the SEC website, and then I'll also give you a third-party poll that was done here in Utah. So a third-party poll was done here in Utah about the filtering issue, and one of the questions was, have you used VidAngel within the last 6 months? And 36% of Utahans said that they had used VidAngel within the last 6 months. And Utah represents just a fraction of our audience.
I was going to say, this is not, you know, Utah's is, got very
we
strong.
Started here, yep. We started here, and so this is where we were strong, but it was quickly growing. We had investments from all 50 states when we did our Regulation A financing, and Texas, I think, is number two, just behind Utah, but it was about to pass Utah because we were growing so much everywhere, and California's third, and I can't remember which.
Okay, so you have 36% of the families in Utah using your service in the last year. But I would imagine if it weren't for the legal, and we're going to get to the most recent development in the company in a minute, if it weren't for the lawsuits, I would imagine as a company you guys would be doing extremely well. I mean, you have lots of users right now, and you'd be in clear sailing now. Now it'd be, you know, reinvesting the profits to grow the company. As opposed to the situation you're in, which brings us to the most recent development. As we're doing this interview, I believe it was just last week that your company had declared bankruptcy. Now it's a restructuring. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that and why you're using bankruptcy as a tool.
So Chapter 11, importantly, is not this. People hear bankruptcy and they think immediately a company's going out of business. That's Chapter 7 bankruptcy, and Chapter 11 is a reorganization. And it has some interesting, really interesting features, and one of them is that it immediately stays all litigation for whom the Chapter 11 filer is a defendant. The second purpose that we did this is because if the law finds that we are liable, we want to pay the damages. We're law-abiding people, and we've tried to be above board through this whole process. And so in a Chapter 11 court, we know because we of our interactions with the studios that that they don't want a resolution. They want us dead. I don't know if it's because of the way that we've gone about this or what, but they do not like VidAngel at all. And in a Chapter 11 court, a Chapter 11 judge looks at the interests of everyone. They look at the interests of the creditors. They look at the interests of the equity holders. They look at the interests of the customers. And their goal, if it's possible, is for that company to come out thriving. That's what happened with Marvel, which is a Disney company. They filed Chapter 11. So what happened with Delta, which is has a hub here in Utah. So it was a move that said, okay, if you guys aren't ever going to come to a resolution, if you're never going to settle, if you're never going to sell us a license, and you get damages, then we're going to pay those damages, and we're going to continue as a business. We're thriving. We had 8 million views on our Dry Bar comedy specials or 8 million minutes viewed last month, and we've had over 25 million minutes viewed so far this month. We're exploding. So we have a really healthy business. The third thing is that we have customers who purchased DVDs and Blu-rays and then sold them back to us, and they have credit on their accounts. And we have 250,000 people in the filing that have credits on their accounts. So it amounts to about 4.3 million. In creditors that are customers. And we want their interests to be balanced. We don't want the studios going first. We want everybody's interests to be balanced here. And we think that a resolution under a Chapter 11 court will be fair to all parties, and everyone will come out being made whole.
How long is this process normally? I mean, did you have a year to kind of work this out? Is it 6 months? Is it 3 months? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, it can be 6 to 18 months that we are operating under, Chapter 11. But honestly, we could get out of it very quickly. We have a very healthy company. We could get out of it very quickly if we could just see whether we have damages, get them liquidated, so that the judge knows exactly what they are, and then if they could be 80, they could be zero, they could be $83,000 because that's or $100,000 because they have 100 titles that they complained about so far, but they could be an astronomical number, and we don't know where that is. And if it was an astronomical number, a Chapter 11 judge could say, hey, you know what, that you owe them. Let's say you owe them $10 million. Well, VidAngel, you could pay that over the next 10 years. Who knows how the judge would handle that, but he's going to handle it. If he sees a healthy business, he's going to handle it in a way that business will be able to pay its obligations and then thrive and then provide value to the
And so just to close the loop on this, so if the bankruptcy judge were to say you do owe damages and the damages are X, would that then take precedence over the lawsuits, and would the lawsuits go away?
Well, I think the damages would be determined by the California court, because that's where that lawsuit is, right?
But that, if I heard you right, the Chapter 11 puts that lawsuit on pause.
It puts it on pause. Eventually, it'll be lifted. We're just saying in our papers, let's pause this long enough to see that we have a healthy, thriving business that could pay those damages if there are any. And then let's go after it. Let's figure out what they are, if there are any, and then we'll pay them. So
now I'm sure you've had attorneys along the way say you should have used this tool earlier, and obviously you decided not to. Why did you decide now is the right time to use Chapter 11 as
a business
tool?
I don't know actually if so. We didn't know all along that this was a tool available to us. We were trying, because we're building all kinds of things in our company. We have this new filtering service. We have a bunch of original content that we're producing. We now have the largest collection of clean stand-up comedy in the world. We've shot 102 episodes over the last 6 months, and it's exploding. People love the content. So we're saying to ourselves, okay, we're looking at, what would be the worst case scenario if we lose in the California litigation? And how does that play out? And we were doing all kinds of research to figure out how this plays out if it doesn't go our way. And then eventually this surfaced. And by the time it surfaced, you know, we were getting close. You know, we were to the point where because of our customer creditors, we are in a place where our liabilities exceed our assets. And we're not, this is a genuine Chapter 11. This is a company that just needs a little time, but is successful.
Great. If you're just joining us this morning, our guest is Neil Harmon. He is the CEO of VidAngel, a company that filters unwanted content from third-party streaming apps like Netflix and Amazon. We also learned you guys are creators of original content. Let's switch gears and talk about that. 8 million views. It sounds like you have 100 episodes of clean stand-up comedy, which, with the exception of Jerry Seinfeld, is very hard to find online. It sounds like that could be a really interesting business opportunity for you guys.
Yeah. It's comedy's exploding. It's very popular on Netflix, on Audible, on all kinds of distribution platforms. But most of it's either explicit or TVMA. So we saw a space for creating family-friendly stand-up. And then we created a model, a system where people come in and they perform in Provo, Utah, which there is clean comedy and then there's Provo clean. So if it falls flat in Provo, then according to the owner of Wise Guys, he says Provo is an interesting, you know, place.
I've never been to a comedy club in Provo. I didn't know Provo had comedy clubs.
Yeah, well, comedy clubs are usually associated with, you know, bars and clubs I think Provo has like two bars or maybe three. So we named the club Dry Bar Comedy because there's no alcohol served there, and we also wanted the comedians to be on the top of their game. So it requires a different level of comedy to be able to get people to laugh when they're sober. And so at any rate, we also signed contracts with the comedians that said, okay, your content after you perform here is, if the audience rates you over 4 stars, then you get to be published on VidAngel. But if you get published on VidAngel, if people filter you less, you get paid more. And so they have a contract. And so we've had people come from LA, from New York, from Seattle, from Mexico, from Canada, all over the world, and they bend over backwards to try to serve this audience. Some of them fail, some specials never make it out the door, but others, they're just, I mean, like gut-wrenching laughing. You should check out some of these videos.
I definitely will, which brings up a point that we should mention. We should mention more than once, and we haven't yet. VidAngel is still operating. Mm-hmm. If somebody wants to subscribe to VidAngel, they can.
30-day free trial. You can go do it right now.
It ties into their existing Netflix account. Mm-hmm. Ties into Amazon Prime videos. Is that correct?
Yep, and Amazon Instant Video Rentals and...
And I'm assuming it's vidangel.com?
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay. vidangel.com.
So this is going on, and then with that, they'd also get access to this dry bar humor.
Yeah, dry bar comedy.
Dry bar comedy, okay. Yeah. Well, so there's several trends that I think are helping you. And they're all helping you. Some are positive and some are negative. One is this re-engagement with stand-up comedy. I find myself, I cut the cord a couple years ago on television. It's one of my favorite things to to watch, you know, you can watch 10 minutes of it, which is what I like before I go to bed. And some comedians I can watch when my kids are in the room, and some comedians I have to make sure they're not around. And so dry bar comedy will help me with that. Another trend that I think is helping you, but it's unfortunate that the society has to deal with it, is this whole sexual harassment that's playing out in the headlines for Hollywood right now. Harvey Weinstein, and there's other studio executives that have gotten themselves in trouble, or it's coming to light now. I would think that's helping your cause in Hollywood. Do you think it's making any impact at all?
Well, I mean, if for these things to come to light, and VidAngel being a very libertarian solution to some of the problems that are created by Hollywood's own bubble. Like, Utah Valley has a bubble. Hollywood has its own bubble where people live a certain way, and they're hiding things, as we've learned, and they're living lives that most Americans don't agree with, and that are harmful to children, that are harmful to women. And you know, I haven't yet seen it in the numbers. It's been such a sad thing that we haven't tried to bring it up, or, you know, we don't feel like it's VidAngel's job to, like, this is the American people's fight. Like, they have every right to demand change on this front, and we're heartened by that. The thing that's sad for me is the irony of how hard they're fighting a little Utah company when they have rampant piracy going on. They have all these problems that are inside of their own system, and they are fighting it. And particularly Disney. I mean, and the Disney is the one I'm most frustrated with. We've seen that on an economic, Disney's the most, they were originally the most opposed to the Family Movie Act, and they're leading the charge today.
I think the audience, our listeners listening to this interview, find bizarre that Disney is the one fighting.
Well, this is the incestuous part about it, is that Disney has an economic motive for wanting VidAngel to be dead, and that is they feel like they own the family market, and that VidAngel makes content available to families, more content, and they think it dilutes their market, but they are harming the American public by fighting this for an economic end instead of actually going after what a family wants. And I think it's against what Disney was created on. And I hope that they will course correct, because, you know, they're an amazing company and they've created some amazing content over the years, and they should have a view of all the ships rising, because content moves more in a family-friendly direction.
I was missing that earlier. I was confused as to why Disney was leading the charge on that, but I can see that viewpoint and why they might be leading the charge. You know, my point with the things that are going on the sexual harassment side is I think it might give you allies inside of Hollywood that maybe a year ago you didn't have.
And I hope so.
I hope that's a positive that comes out of something horrible that's been going on for decades. You know, another thing my notes share with me here is VidAngel has been active in trying to get more women directors involved in movie making. How did that become a cause that VidAngel is behind?
Well, I mean, we have our chief operating officer is a woman, Liz Ellis. She's amazing, and she's everybody's favorite in the entire company. She's the glue of the company. And we've worked with a number of really talented people from Studio C, and there are people on our Dry Bar Comedy team that are over and over again, some of the most talented and helpful and ingenuitive people are women. And so we just feel like we need to listen, and we need to listen to it comes down to, you know, 87% of people who use VidAngel are religious, right? Well, that's what we've learned is 87 are highly religious. That's what they say. Hollywood does a good job of representing the different races in their films so that they match society. They'll do a certain percentage African-American, they'll do a certain percentage Asian, et cetera, et cetera. But what they don't do is they don't represent faith very well. They don't actually do the cross-section of faith across of America to represent that in their movies. Faith gets omitted, so that's an underserved audience. And we feel like women are an like they're a group that are underrepresented, underserved. The faith audience is underserved. It's just in our DNA to fight for those who are underserved because we feel like we're the little guy.
And I'm glad there's organizations like you that it's in your DNA to fight for the underdogs, for the underserved. I think people probably, it's probably why you have as many members as you do, not just for the service, but for what your company represents to them, which is why people were willing to donate to help with the fight. We need to start wrapping up, but I want to talk about that DNA. I mean, as I hear, if I had been involved in a legal situation like this for as many years as you've been, I'd be exhausted. And you're not. I mean, you're passionate about the cause. I don't know what your resolve was, you know, 5 years ago, 7 years ago, but it's hard to imagine it's any stronger than it is today. What do you think it is in your DNA that's given you that strength for this fight?
Oh, goodness, Doug. I don't know how to answer that question. So
I don't think many people would have stuck with it as long as you have. I've worked with other company CEOs that have faced lawsuits, and it's often a very quick death to the company when that happens, particularly when the other party is a major party with deep pockets. It's game over. Sorry.
Yeah. I think for me, it just really comes down to two things. The first and the most important is this is something I want for my children and my grandchildren. I want that, and it's worth taking it all the way to get it. The second is previous entrepreneurial failures. There was a wise man in Idaho who once said to me, "You've never failed until you quit." And one of my favorite quotes of all time is Randy Nelson from Pixar. And he says, at Pixar, we have to honor failure because failure is the negative space that surrounds success. And I lost, you know, a lot of money and had to work out of a situation on a previous business for 7 years to pay back family, to pay back investors, to pay back clients, rather than declaring bankruptcy. Just we worked and worked and worked. We thought it would take us 15 years. We ended up getting out of that debt in 7 years, which was a miracle all on its own. But there was one particular time when everything was so dark, and I was sitting on a porch in Idaho, and I remember that our servers were down, the company was having problems, we had let everybody go, the 2008 crash had happened, and it was so black that I just couldn't see any light at all. And I don't even know to this day how I managed to get myself back up on my feet. It was a power outside of my own. But to me, that was the hardest point in my life. And this battle is hard, and these are formidable foes, but there's battles that go inside of every one of us where all I would say is that we just have to stand back up when we fall. And that's the most important thing. And the reason it's so easy for me to get myself back up, don't kid yourself. I've lost a lot of hair, and it's a lot grayer than it was when I started this battle. But it's easier for me to get myself up today because of the hundreds of thousands of families who are cheering us on than it was at that time. And my hope would be that anybody out there who's going through a dark time would just stand back up, because they're going to learn things from standing back up that are going to help them down the road.
Neil Harmon is the founder and CEO of VidAngel. Today's show was recorded at the KCPW studios on Library Square and edited and produced by me. You can catch the entire conversation, again, on our website or on the podcast version for this show. I'm Ross Chambliss. Join us next week on The Bottom Line.